Welcome back to another episode of Ice Cap Insights, brought to you by the Tribune Chronicle and Vindicator, two of the longest-running newspapers in the Mahoning Valley. My name is Greg McAfee, as always, sports editor here at the Tribune Chronicle and Vindicator, and I'm here with Joel Wetzel, YSU beat reporter. Joel, how are we doing this evening?
I'm good. I just got off my shift on the news desk, pinch hitting up there, so good to be back into sports for the last... what hour of my shift?
We're coming here Thursday night. We normally record Wednesday night. Had a couple things happen in the office.
It's actually Friday morning.
So you'll have this bright and early to enjoy with your coffee on Friday. But we're here just to break down the Indiana State game, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Western Illinois, and kind of go from there for another exciting. Another exciting Ice Cap Insights episode. So obviously coming off a very exciting game against Indiana State, the Penguins came out with a 48-42 victory.
A very needed win. as exciting as the big plays were, they needed that.
Oh, 100%.
Really badly.
I feel like you know those games that you played in high school where I'm not calling Indiana State a bad team whatsoever, but like where you beat up on like the little brother type thing, mm-hmm. and you score 20 runs or you score, you know, 70 points or something like that, just kind of like you have one of those games where everything just kind of clicks. It seemed like this was that type of game for YSU.
At least offensively.
It
felt more like a Big 12 game in Lubbock, Texas than it did a Missouri Valley slugfest, because normally like Valley games, you know, 20s and 30s, like if you get into the 30s in a Valley game, it's pretty high scoring. Mm-hmm. 48-42. I mean, the first play of the game was a 75-yard touchdown, and then they just started trading jabs the rest of the day. It was probably the second longest game I have covered in terms of like time and plays and all that. I think YSU ended up with 80 plays. That is absurd.
So does the final score say more about the offenses of each team or more about the secondary / defenses of each team?
That's a good question. I think it says a lot that in two games now, YSU's offense has scored 30 and 48 points after getting blanked at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So thrilled with that progress. I would like to think the 42 the defense gave up was a one-off. I mean, they haven't been that bad all season.
Yeah, I mean, because we saw them have success so much early on that when I saw that number, I was like, that's got to be like an outlier type game type thing.
Yeah, and like the big plays, most of them just came down to, the guy makes a catch and spins out of a tackle, or Justin Dinka spins out of, like, the 75-yard touchdown on the first play would have gone for a 3-yard gain if Dinka goes down on first contact. So that's correctable. Yeah, I mean, you don't love it, especially, you know, midway through the season. But if it just comes down to you didn't make tackles when you had your opportunities, that you can fix that, and you can fix that in a week. Mm-hmm. So I'm not ready to panic on the YSU defense given the track record it had built itself, but man, that was woof.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a bad day.
Yeah. So 2 weeks of Mitch Davidson, what are your overall thoughts on the new QB1?
Oh man, just what the doctor ordered. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any other way to put it. You know, he spreads it well. He's had completions to at least 5 receivers in both starts now. That's what this offense wanted to be. And I'll tell you who I think is benefiting the most from it is Bryce Alden.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We've kind of been waiting for him to just kind of break out, and he's had a couple big games the last 2 weeks.
We have heard since his arrival, oh, man, number zero is athletic. He can make all these
numbers. Number eight breaks out all the time.
Number eight is Jaleel McLaughlin, who like does that even when things aren't working. But, yeah, Bryce Oliver – he scored YSU's first touchdown of the day on a one-handed 50-yard reception. I mean, you're starting to see things like that this offense, frankly, just wasn't doing before Mitch Davidson went under center or in the shotgun. I don't think they line him up under center much. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing is how well he has spread the ball and just making the correct reads, not playing hero ball, the same thing we talked about a week ago.
Yeah.
He's just facilitating. And he is putting things on film that are only going to make Jaleel McLaughlin tougher to defend, because if you stack the box on Jaleel now, hey, YSU's finally capable of saying, we don't care, we're just going to throw a deep to Bryce Oliver, thanks. So, like I said, a much-needed shot in the arm for an offense that, you know, could go for a touchdown at any time, but now you like the balance it brings.
I also want to ask you about something else. I think they introduced it this week for the first time, but Demetri Crenshaw had a special package a little bit.
He went in under center on like a third and one and ran a QB sneak. I think situationally that works. I don't think you need to put him back there in known passing situations. I don't think they ever will. But yeah, like those third and threes where you can kind of just give one more look. Mm-hmm. To a defense.
It kind of reminds me of what North Dakota did when they
were
here.
Yeah, with Quincy Vaughn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, just one more thing defenses have to worry about. And really, you can even have Demetri throw out of those once in a while. I mean, now, he only ran the sneak. We didn't see him run like any zone reads or anything like that. But I think that's something YSU probably continues to throw wrinkles with moving forward.
So obviously the offense has been very efficient the past two games. They put up, 30 against North Dakota. They put up 48 here against Indiana State. They get Western Illinois. Sorry, I'm on high school time still. Western Illinois this weekend. Do you think this is something that is sustainable kind of moving forward with the balance that they have established between the pass game and the run game?
Well, I think it has to be sustainable for them to be successful, but my goodness, if they can't do it against Western Illinois, they can't do it against anybody. This defense stinks. Western Illinois ranks 118th in total defense. For context, there are 123 FCS teams. So, you're talking like a awful defense, and everyone kind of knew it was going to be this way. Western got hit by the portal. Actually, YSU vultured off their star linebacker Craig Benton, who's been a starter since he got here. But this week I think you can maybe see just how prolific it could be when everything clicks, but go out and take care of business too. I mean,
So you're saying this week they should, instead of putting up 48, they should put up like 60 something.
I mean, they could if they wanted to. I think what you're more likely to see is they get a handy lead. They put it out of reach for good. My goodness. And we'll get into the series history in a little bit, but, and then just kind of deflate the ball and call it a day. I mean, you're on the road. Don't take any chances. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think 500 yards of offense is out of question this week. I really don't.
Yeah. Just kind of back to the Indiana State game a little bit. We talked about the defense. We talked about, obviously, the high-scoring game. What do you think it was? Do you think it was just those little kind of missed tackles that led to big plays that was kind of the end-all, be-all for YSU? Or was it kind of a, you know what I mean, like a situational thing?
Yeah,
what did you see?
I think for the most part, it was just broken tackles and not getting guys down. There were a few things where Indiana State just kept going to the slants over and over. And I was like, just defend a slant.
Yeah.
But Indiana State, to its credit, also has probably the Missouri Valley's top receiver in Dante Hendricks. Yep. So I think that played a little bit. But get another tough receiver this week, so clean it up. But I don't think it's anything to panic over. I mean, at one point, Indiana State's number two receiver, his name escapes me, caught a slant, juked two guys, and then just took off for the end zone. And we just have not seen that at all this year. So like I said, chalk it up as a one-off for now, but if it continues, you've got a problem.
You got a problem. Yeah, I was just curious because I'm looking at the box score from Saturday, and I'm looking at they have like longest plays for each player. So Cole Chambers' longest play was 53 yards. Mm-hmm. Justin Dinka's longest play was 75 yards.
That was that first play of the game, that big run.
Dante Hendricks' longest play was 43 yards. Dakota Caton's longest play was 53 yards,
Caton was the number two. Juked, I think – it was either Quincy Linton or Marcus Hooker. He juked on a slant and then just took off. It was a sweet play.
And then Ethan Chambers' longest play was 35 yards. Kevin Barnett, 18. Harry Van Dyne, that's a great name, 14. And then Justin Dinka, 18 yards receiving.
Yeah.
So it was just big plays. Splash plays is what it seems like.
Up the sideline, down the sideline, and slants and breaking tackles. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily panic time, like I said. If you get the fundamentals back down, which is what Doug Phillips kind of pointed to, whether that's making tackles, being in proper alignment, whatever, then you're going to be fine. And I think they will be. And good week to sort it all out anyway. So, yeah.
I mean, it seems like obviously they snap the 3-game losing streak. They get back in the winning side of things. Just kind of how, I mean, just kind of to get it back into the win column, how big is it for them just kind of moving forward?
Man, I think a relief more than anything. I mean, if you lose that game, season's over. There's no question. And if you lose any of them between now and Southern Illinois, the season's effectively over. But, I mean, after the game, walk into the locker room, I kind of like got mixed in the shuffle of the players returning to the locker room. And you could just sense the relief and the jubilation that they're back on track for at least a week. So from a mentality and confidence standpoint, really, really big. And hopefully for them, the kind of win that kind of gets you in a little mojo now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like the old coaching saying goes, you want to go 1-0 each week. And I think that's what YSU is looking to do throughout the rest of the season, at least.
Yeah, and as much as we've gone after the defense for its performance, credit to them because they gave up 42 through three quarters and then kept Indiana State to like 4 yards in the fourth quarter or something crazy like that. So they hunkered down when they absolutely had to. So, you know, really important win.
Yeah. Now they're going to Macomb this weekend to take on Western Illinois. We talked about it a little bit already. Obviously, it's one that the Penguins should win handily, it seems like. Give us your breakdown.
This is the worst team in the Missouri Valley. They weren't good a year ago. They got worse because of the coaching change, because of the portal, because of graduations. Go out and put it to them early. Get it out of reach, and then get your starters off the field, I think should be like your main objectives, and then get out of Macomb healthy.
I do want to ask one question. Trap game.
Oh, that's tough because you got a big one next week with South Dakota. I'm going to say no simply because I think on paper YSU is that much better. But I think what you don't want to have happen is Western to get their receiver Nassim Brantley kind of on the loose and then maybe expose some things about your defense that you don't want out there. So be careful. I mean, don't let them hang around, but you shouldn't anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say trap game, but it's certainly not like, you know, you're just going to go in and breeze through it and not have a care in the world either.
Yeah. Is this a game like with Brantley kind of coming in, leading the MVFC in receptions, is it another test for that secondary to kind of get right the ship away in a little bit?
Yeah, it is. And really the impressive thing with Brantley leading the Missouri Valley in receptions, they have played like three quarterbacks all season. I mean, he is doing that with probably the worst quarterback situation in the Valley.
No continuity, understand.
Yeah, so all the credit in the world to Brantley. I think he was a grad transfer, I'm pretty sure. So a good pickup for them. Keep your eyes on him. The thing about Western versus like Indiana State with Dante Hendricks is like at least Indiana State had a Justin Dinka in the backfield they could run with. Western's run game is non-existent. Really has had trouble this year. So honestly, I think you can probably get away with really keying on Brantley and say, yeah, run on us.
Just kind of putting numbers in the secondary and hoping that defensive line that was strong at the beginning of the year can just get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, just double Brantley and say, all right, the other 10, you can go beat us then. But I think that's really the key. Prevent the big plays and take care of the ball. Don't do the things that feed upsets is the bottom line, because you're going to get into trouble if you do that, especially because recent series history dictates that you have given up leads. I mean, since Doug's arrival, Doug Phillips, they've led Western Illinois in both games by double digits in the second half. Last year, they led 35-14 at halftime and 35-7 late in the second quarter, and lost both games. I really think the emphasis is on staying locked in and, you know, once you're ahead, slam on the throttle. Don't let up. Don't let them back into this. And that's kind of what I want to see is, all right, you build like a 28-3 lead, do something with it, grow it in the third quarter. So then in the fourth, you can have your younger guys get some time.
Did Doug say anything about those losses? Kind of any extra motivation there or anything like that to like kind of really, put the pedal to the metal this week?
I don't think he'd go so far as to say revenge, but he did say those two games don't sit well with this program, and they're games he can never give back to the history of Youngstown State. So I certainly think the motivation is there. I don't think there's any question that they will be locked in going to Macomb.
So it seems like a pretty good situation kind of going to Macomb for YSU. It seems like they, you know, would be the overall favorite. I'm not sure if there's a spread. I'm not sure if there's a percentage of them coming home, but it seems like they would hold the edge in this one.
My prediction in the paper was 42-10 YSU. I have not looked at a sports betting app in years because I got really angry the last time.
It's illegal in Ohio. For now.
Be that as it may. But yeah, I think this will be a pretty comfortable Youngstown State win. I mean, just given everything Western's been through, and now, especially now that YSU's offense is starting to find a really nice groove, I think this sets up well to be kind of a pretty easy day.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good to know. As always, let's get into a little MVFC recap. Joelski, take it away.
All right. So, Illinois State 12, South Dakota 10. That was kind of low score. Yeah. I mean, well, and those are YSU's next two opponents after they go to Macomb. So, you know, interesting.
Interesting to see. Yeah.
I can't believe South Dakota's only got one win this year, though. I mean,
that's wild.
I voted them high.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, but I had them like sixth or seventh. What Southern Illinois beat Western 30-7. No surprise. I think Southern Illinois has found itself back into the playoff picture now.
Found a little groove after a rough start.
Mm-hmm. And they played two top 25 teams to open the year, so maybe not the end of the world, but they're tough. Yeah. I mean, now, if you're YSU, that's who you end the season with. Win out and make that a de facto win in your end game.
That's at home, too,
isn't it? At home, and it's the team that you snapped that long road losing streak against last year. They went out to Carbondale and smacked them.
Yeah, oh yeah. That was a surprising one. We all looked at the box score afterwards. We're like, did that just happen?
Yeah, I was covering YSU men's basketball that day, and fans behind me, great people, by the way, asked me to put the football game on my laptop during the men's basketball game so they could pay attention to both. And as it was going on, we were like, wow. All right.
Is this really happening?
Yeah.
Do you believe in miracles?
Yeah. So a winnable game again this year. But like I said, take care of your business between now and then. And that could be a really big opportunity to end the year. Here's the big one. South Dakota State won the Dakota marker against North Dakota State in the Fargo Dome. South Dakota State trailed 21-7 at half and came back for a 23-21 win. I don't know many teams that could do that against NDSU.
You called it.
I did call that. I was on here rambling about how South Dakota State was the better team. So the Jacks proved me right, and I think the Jacks are a serious title threat. Them, Montana State, I don't think you can count out NDSU by any means, but yeah, Stiegelmeyer's got the SDSU train rolling. And then Northern Iowa won 41-14 over Utah Tech, which I don't know how that kind of game gets scheduled in week 7 of Missouri Valley play, but anyway, this week there's a few good ones. Illinois State at Indiana State, I'll kind of be interested in, you know, the Redbirds. I think are a pretty good team. That's kind of the next litmus test for YSU, in my opinion, because you get winless Western this week, you get one win South Dakota next week, then you go to Normal and get ISU. That'd be an interesting game. Southern Illinois at South Dakota, if for no other reason, just keep an eye on YSU's next opponent. And then really the big one, South Dakota State at North Dakota, because a lot of times in college sports, you get that big emotional win, and then the next week you lay a clunker.
Yep.
And you can't lay a clunker against North Dakota. That's a playoff football team in Grand Forks. So I will be interested to see how South Dakota State kind of handles everything. I think they'll be fine. They've been in that position before. It's not like this is the Jackrabbits' first time in the top 25 or top 5. So that's a trap game, though. That is absolutely a trap game. And North Dakota is coming off a bye, which makes it even tougher.
Ready to go.
And then the only other one is Missouri State at Northern Iowa, which, like, before this season, I would have been like, oh, man, that's a big game. And now it's all right. So that's what we've got going on. And then we're only a couple weeks from basketball season.
The Horizon polls came out this week.
They
Horizon
did.
Rankings, women got number one.
And the men are number five.
What do you think about that?
It's a little low. Having said that, every team 1 through 5 could win the Horizon League.
I think
the tough thing.
I think Jared said that, and he was at the Kerpstone coaches here earlier this week and was like, it's wide open. I mean, so many teams have improved over the offseason.
NKU is going to be really tough. They were tied for first place with Purdue Fort Wayne. PFW brought like its whole roster except one guy back, including Jared Godfrey. So really tough out. Those two tied for first. I think Wright State was third, and then Oakland was fourth, and then YSU fifth. Those are probably your contenders. There's no doubt. I think Detroit Mercy will still be tough, and you bring Antoine Davis back, you're going to be good. And then I think Robert Morris is underrated too. I think they're going to have a good little year. Mm-hmm. So the men's side's, it's going to be fun.
That's going to be a lot of competition.
Someone described the Missouri Valley to me as crabs in boiling water pulling each other back down into the pot. I feel like that's what the Horizon League's about to be, just beating the crap out of each other until the postseason tournament. It's a weird thing to visualize.
It's a great thing to visualize. I think it's like a perfect no, because I can totally see it. You have all of these teams that are like, you know, competing for the top spot, but there's not one like super favorite that's kind of coming out of that group, and it's just going to have to, as it plays out, it's who's going to be decided.
I really think YSU has the pieces to make that run. We can get into basketball more when the season actually kind of comes right up on us, but the ceiling's the NCAA tournament, and the floor I think is probably about where they were last year. The basketball classic, the misadventures of the basketball classic.
The interesting postseason tournament.
One episode down the road, you'll ask me about that, and I'll just tee off. Not tonight. You said, the women, number one.
First time in school history.
First time, yeah. I don't think that's any surprise. Like the men, they went out and hammered the portal and really, really did well with that. I don't want to count anybody else out. But I think Green Bay is your biggest threat. And then I think Cleveland State will make a little noise, but I kind of think it's a two-team race between YSU and Green Bay, and then maybe CSU can upset its way in. On the preseason teams, Dwayne Cohill was a first-teamer for the men, and Lily Ritz was a first-teamer for the girls, but was not player of the year. That one surprised me as much as the men being fifth, was Lily Ritz not being player of the year. Because a season ago, that was kind of the two-person race between her and Macy Williams, and obviously Macy won it for the 13 millionth time in her college career. But, yeah, man, Destiny Leo from Cleveland State got it. Worthy pick. She is arguably the top guard in this league, so it makes sense. I was just surprised that last year's
after the season she had last year,
runner-up to that award didn't get the preseason award, but maybe they're just tired of forwards. I don't know. But that's kind of what we're looking at. A lot of high expectations going into the winter.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. We were planning out Joel's trips early on in the season, and I was like, "Are you really gonna do that?" Yep, I'm ready to go. Yeah, let's go. I'm ready to travel.
The busy time, that football basketball overlap. It's fun, but man, it wears you out by the end.
It'll be very exciting. Very exciting time.
Use the rest of my vacation days in December.
There you go. All right. Well, that's all we have for another episode of Ice Cap Insights brought to you by the Tribune Chronicle and Vindicator. We'll be back next week on Thursday. And so stay tuned. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And we'll be back again. Have a good night.